And appreciate that update, Dave. And now moving back, of course, to Jeff Smith with us today, Kansas State University cultural geography professor. And when we're talking about oil, it's amazing all the different repercussions it has globally. And believe it or not, Iran, some of what they're going through all ties back to some issues with oil too, I guess, Jeff.
Exactly. And so we've talked about Russia. Well, Iran has gone through similar challenges with the price of oil. Just much less oil revenue coming in. I think given the time constraints, I don't want to go into too many details, so I'll just try to highlight some of the major events. But within Iran, you always had a country, or for longest, always have had a country that has seen itself as being different than a lot of the Middle Eastern countries, an alternative beacon, or kind of one of the shining lights, alternative to maybe Saudi Arabia. We have to remember that Iran is a Shia Muslim country, where the Shia population or the Shia sect is dominant, and Saudi Arabia is a country with a dominant Sunni population, Sunni Muslim population. And so Iran has always seen itself as being just a little bit different, maybe old school, if you will. Between 1940s and 1970s, Iran had very strong ties with the United States. And for those in the listening audience who are old enough, they will remember the Shah of Iran and very, very strong ties with the United States. All of that changed in 1979 with the Iranian Revolution, and we remember the hostages that were taken and how that lasted over a year to resolve that. In the 1990s, and I should say that after the Iranian Revolution in 1979, then you had a theological democracy where the clerics made the rules for the country, and then there was an elected president. In the 1990s, Iran resurrected its nuclear program, and they funded that with oil money. And so as long as oil prices were high, they had plenty of money to invest in the development of their nuclear program. They always asserted it was for energy. The world community was concerned about the potential for generating nuclear weapons. By the 2000s, the world community, especially United States, Europe, Russia, and even China, but even more in particular Israel, became very concerned with Iran's nuclear weapons program or nuclear program. And what the world community was most concerned about is that Iran refused to admit that it had a nuclear weapons program. They always asserted it was just energy. They refused to allow UN inspectors in who would verify that it is just energy. And so underneath President George W. Bush, Iran was listed as one of the members of the Axis of Evil. And that's a really harsh term or harsh label, but, it reflects the time that we had or where we were at that time, a very, very concerned country. In 2006, then, the world community joined together, Europe, Russia, China, United States, and imposed an embargo against or upon Iran. And that limited the amount of exports that Iran could send out, meaning oil, and it also limited the imports that could go into Iran. Until 2014, when oil prices dropped, Iran had enough money that they could snub their nose at the world, and they could say, fine, if you want to impose an embargo, we can get around it. We still have got enough oil money. Well, when the price of oil dropped in 2014, the government felt it because there was less revenue coming in, and the people of Iran started to suffer. And so this was the catalyst then for change within Iran. They were compelled to come to the negotiation table and try to do something on their side to end the embargo. And the recent elections over the weekend, where they just re-elected their current president, was really all about a referendum on the embargo and on the economic situation within Iran. And as long as the country is able to continue moving forward, then I think that Iran will pull out of this.
We have another phone call. Welcome to In Focus. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much, caller, for the question. The area that you're referring to in Siberia, out in the western part of Russia today, is known as the taiga, and it is a large old-growth forest. Part of the problem or part of the challenge is that it's a very difficult area to get to. Much like the oil that is on the eastern side of the Ural Mountains, the area is very, very fragile, and so you cannot take big trucks in without having an impact on the environment. But more importantly, the ground is covered with permafrost, and so you have these short windows of time where you can get into the area because the ground is frozen. If you go too late in spring, then the permafrost turns into a bog and your trucks just sink down into the ground. And if you go too early in fall before the winter, before the cold temperatures return, you get the same thing. So that permafrost makes it very difficult to be able to extract that timber, but also the oil. The United States gets a good amount, and Canada is a major supplier of timber. And so we've got quite a bit of timbering in the United States, but Canada is a big producer.
Appreciate the phone call.
Thank you, caller.
And I don't know, briefly, Venezuela. I know we've kind of gone over time. We can talk just briefly. I know I didn't realize Venezuela has. We'd mentioned them at the beginning, so we probably should explain a little more. But oil also impacting what's going on in their country, and I know they're in some dire straits right now.
Yeah, real quickly, Kathy. You know, we had Hugo Chavez was the most famous or infamous, depending on what perspective you've got, president in modern times. He was president between 1999 and 2013 when he died of cancer. On his deathbed, then he encouraged the population to vote for Nicolas Maduro. And Venezuela, when Hugo Chavez was the president, did some really great things. They funded a lot of social programs both within Venezuela and around the world. It's not readily known, but Venezuela even donated oil to the United States after Hurricane Katrina in 2005 as a way to just help out the world community. On the other side of the equation, Venezuela under Hugo Chavez funded a lot of revolutions around Latin America and supported different regimes, all being alternatives to the United States or to the West, Europe and the United States. And the regime that they funded the most, or at least had the strongest ties with, was Cuba's government and Fidel Castro. Well, when Nicolas Maduro then took over, he pretty much kept the ship afloat. He didn't make a lot of changes right after Hugo Chavez died in 2013. But that changed once again when the oil prices dropped in 2014. And when the price of oil dropped, the country had less money coming in. They could not fund the social programs. They could not help other governments around the world. And this led to a lot of civil unrest, a lot of protests. If you go to some of the Latin American news media outlets, they talk about all of the demonstrations and the military being brought in to try to calm the situation and to dispel and disperse the protesters. The future of Venezuela then is really about what the military will do. Will the military continue to back Nicolas Maduro and all of the financial crises that go along with the oil, the drop in oil prices, or will they allow a new person to be installed or brought in?
Looks like we might have another call coming in, but maybe just some closing thoughts as we get close to wrapping up.
Yeah, Kathy, I think the thing that all three of these have in common that that is important to note is the change in the oil prices, both Russia, Iran, and Venezuela. Now, for people in Manhattan, Kansas, and in the state of Kansas, you know, how does this affect us? Well, Maybe we can look at Venezuela as just one example. Once they get things stabilized, they're able to continue or return to receiving revenue from the exporting of oil, maybe they can buy more goods. And just like we saw with Cuba, and Kathy, you and I have talked about it, farmers in Kansas growing wheat have been able to send a lot of wheat to Cuba. And Venezuela is the same way. They have got severe food shortages, and so perhaps when things get resolved in Venezuela, we can see more of our wheat being sent.
We do have a quick phone call. I know we need to wrap up here pretty quickly, but go ahead, please, listener.
Yes, thank you, caller. On one level, definitely, I would agree, because there is a model that is just not working, and you can spend lots and lots of money on getting reelected if you're in a social democracy, and that doesn't necessarily mean you're efficient. Yep. So very much.
Something
thank you very
about.
Much.
Well, again, really appreciate you stopping by today and learned a lot. I know I have. Kansas State University Cultural Geography Professor Jeff Smith with us. We'll take a break. We come back and shift gears a little bit, although maybe not that much. We have with us coming up Communication Studies Professor and Assistant Director of the Institute for Civic Discourse, Timothy Schaefer. You're listening to In Focus.